The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, on board today. Deion Sanders hired at Colorado, the impact on Arizona and Arizona State. All the college football news and notes around with John Wilner. Plus, I got a lot on my mind that we'll get to here momentarily. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. Had a good weekend. Had a bit of an emotional Friday night. My son played his last high school football game, Cole Sessmatt, and his team, Castile, lost in the state semis to Pinnacle. Pinnacle has a player, Deuce Robinson, that will play either professional baseball or football. He had 4 touchdowns and a half. And I walked up to him afterwards and introduced myself. And it's a very nice, polite young man. He's a body that you just look at and say, OMG, like capital letters, like this is such a good looking athlete and played so well for Pinnacle. It was fun. And you know, a lot of emotions. I didn't cry. I didn't get all emotional about it. My son has been through his journey in high school with a couple of surgeries. Those of you who watch this know that his road has been much less traveled, I guess the best way to put it. He had a great high school experience out of all of it. When I hear people, they're like, well, it was terrible. Usually here's how it goes in high school, okay? Freshman year, parents are all excited and kid plays and about towards the end of the freshman year, yeah, you know, they may be good enough for varsity. And my kid's better than this kid. And then, you know, they volunteer to work in the snack bar and all that stuff. And I hear parents say, well, you know, the snack bar at this high school has this kind of popcorn versus what we have here. And I'm just like, are you guys kidding me? And then it goes to sophomore year, you know, they play sevens. Everybody excited about their 7-on-7 gear. And man, we dominated in sevens and like, yeah, okay. And then they don't play varsity. They're on JV. JV is just not where we should be. We should be at a higher level, but you know, we believe in the program. We're all good. Junior year, no, they're not getting recruited yet as much as they think that they should be versus reality. And then they start looking into the transfer portal. By the time they get through their senior year, they've probably transferred and they trash the program and they say what a football joke this was or that was. And it's usually parents. The kids usually don't care. That's pretty normal. I asked for a credential for my wife to be with me on the sidelines so that she wouldn't have to hear the nonsense that comes out of the bleachers. It may sound very elitist. It's not. It's just there's just people that have no bleeping clue what they're talking about. And they just think yelling from the stands, block somebody. It's a 15-year-old, 17. Come on, coach. Okay, I'm just not about this. Not about it at all. And then you hear them trashing other kids. My kid were out there. Well, he's not, okay? So don't get me wrong. High school is a great experience. Our son has all the things you would want. Big size, 6'7", 300 pounds. Had injuries, happens. Had a couple of big surgeries, happens. PTSD, happens. Worked through it. Got great grades. Going to go on to college. Going to leave the state. Excited. Made lifelong friends. Laughed with them, cried with them. It's everything you want out of high school football, and that's it. They play in the state semis. It's cool. It's great. I just, some of the bat bleep crazy stuff that I see and hear, it's just like, okay. Let's move on. So that was Friday night. The cool thing Friday night was not only was our son's last game, I didn't know at the time, and I saw Deuce Robinson catch 4 touchdowns and kill it. He did it in front of Kenny Dillingham. So I had not known Kenny Dillingham other than just by name. The new Arizona State football coach was with Sean Aguano. I walk in, I see Sean, I chop it up with Sean, and then I ran into Cody Cameron. He said, hey, I saw you with Sean. Did you see Kenny is here? No. So I go around, I find him. He's with Bobby Wade. And so I'm talking to the new ASU head football coach. And it's a Friday night. It's bitterly cold. And he's there. He's on the Castile side of the field. And he walks over to the Pinnacle side of the field. Because Deuce Robinson's having a night. And Kenny just needs to get noticed. Kenny just needs some FaceTime. Kenny's just about, let's get after these kids. Even though Deuce Robinson's been offered by Georgia and Alabama and everybody wants to be a baseball football kid. Anyways, game ends. Sad for my son, but you know, he's fine. He's doing his thing with his team. And I walk over to Pinnacle and I shake Deuce Robinson's hand, chat with him for a bit. And I'm standing there and Kenny Dillingham is still there. He is still there. And the game's over. And it's now 15 minutes after, and 20 minutes after, and 30 minutes after. And Kenny Dillingham is still there on a Friday night in the middle of nowhere, because we live in the middle of nowhere near Castile. And that says a lot to me. You may think, oh, what are you talking about? It's only about wins and losses. No, it's about the grit and the grind. It's about the hustle. Sean Aguano and Bobby Wade left at halftime. They went to another game. My understanding is the game they went to, Highland Red Mountain, Charlie Regal, assistant head coach at ASU, is at the game, Red Mountain game, long after it ends, because there's a receiver over there that he's after. And that's how you have to be. You know, some people at ASU, they're still pissed off at me because, you know, for the last, I don't know how many years, I pointed out how inept and incompetent they were on their football staff and how they just flat lied about how interested they were in being around local kids. And so when I see people sincere about it, I don't know if they're going to get them. I don't have a dog in the fight. It's just be sincere, especially to your sponsors, your alums, these boosters. Don't tell them that you care about local kids when you clearly don't. So it's just refreshing. That's all. That was Friday night. Friday night, we also were in the Mesa Film Festival. And the Mesa Film Festival, we had a winner. Best sports documentary. Brandy Aguilar, Jordan Spurgeon, ALS to Ashes, Corey Nocta story. Congratulations to them. It was cool. I was with Claudia and Spurge and Devin Henry as they did the Zach Hoffpower documentary. Jordan Hamm had his documentary with Zaven Collins. So it's great when I see our staff just go thrive, go do their thing, go do what they want to do, go chase some film work. And that was fun on Friday night. Saturday was a lot of college football, of course. And then yesterday, I was going to take a chill day. Cardinals are off. Don't need to see the nonsense, which is part of the deal. I'm excited for the baseball winter meetings. And then I start getting these text messages about, hey, Brock Purdy's in the game. So I come in here and I my screen over here and I just kind of sit here and go, wow, okay, what a game, what a story. And I start texting the parents because we've done so many things on the Purdy's and I get photos and all stuff. It's up on my social. You can check it out over on Twitter. It was just fun. Brock Purdy's legend just continues to grow. Yeah, he's too short. He's too small. Mr. Sesmat, what community college should I go to? Because no colleges are showing interest in me. And 6 weeks later, he's at Nick Saban's house. Like, so I know there's some parents that watch this or even coaches that do. It's Monday. It's December 5th. Today is the day the transfer portal will open in college. Transfer portal will open in high school here in a couple of weeks. There's some of you watching right now. You already know you're going to put your kid in the transfer portal for high school. I don't know why you would do that over and over and over. But we're just looking for the right opportunity. No, you're trying to chase a scholarship. Let's just call it as it is. And what does the kid want to do? Brock Purdy's journey now is going to go to a whole new level. I was sending some notes to Peter King yesterday because Peter was in San Francisco. He was writing. I knew he was. And one of them was the Brock Purdy, what community college story should I go to? Peter had a great column today, his Monday morning, Football Morning America column, where Brock now plays against Tampa Bay this next week. So it's Brock Purdy against Tom Brady. And it's just like, wow, how cool is that? So there was that. I checked out some of the Suns yesterday against another bad NBA team. San Antonio is really bad, but tonight's a cool game. They play Dallas. And I watched both ASU and U of A yesterday. Rainy weekend. We went and got our tree. We put it up. I wasn't feeling the greatest because I've been running hard, but got through it. Watched ASU win again. ASU's 8-1. U of A, after stubbing their toe against Utah, did what they're supposed to do against Cal. They looked every part of the top 10 team in the nation. And Grand Canyon won over the weekend. They beat Wyoming. So we have college basketball, good college basketball, three of our programs. So all in all, it was a successful weekend. And then the Deion Sanders story broke. So Deion Sanders going to Colorado. Colorado, and I'll talk with Wilner about this in a minute. Colorado is one of the worst programs in the nation in terms of facilities. They've run through, I think it's five or six coaches since 2000. They're worse than, you know, like ASU's just mired in mediocrity. Colorado's just been bad. That's all. Like Colorado was Arizona bad under Kevin Sumlin. That was bad. Really bad. And so Deion's going to be there. I don't know if it'll be 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. I don't know. We put some stories up on the site. Wilner sent me his column on Deion that's up on the website, sports360az.com. I threw some stuff up there as well. Did have some ASU fans that said we should have held out for Deion Sanders rather than Kenny Dillingham. I think it's a different situation here. than it is up at Colorado with the NCAA stuff still hanging around. And that's that. All right, let's get over to John Wilner. We'll do that next. I'm Brad Sussmat. As promised, John Wilner, every Monday, he joins us for a few minutes. Wilner Hotline. You can check out his content on the website at sports360az.com. You can follow him on his social media channels. He's part of the Canzano Wilner podcast, or as I say, the Wilner Canzano podcast, because John is the lead.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, there you go.
Appreciate it.
The Pac-12, when they announced the hiring of Deion Sanders at Colorado, the reaction within the walls of the league office was?
You know, I think they're probably happy about it because he is a personality, a massive personality, right, in football, college football. And it has made the conference much more interesting generally, and it has made one of the lagging programs more interesting by, you know, a factor of 50, right? Mm-hmm. Colorado is all of a sudden, I mean, that was the top story on ESPN's website yesterday afternoon, right? I mean, that is going to generate attention. It's going to, in theory, help Colorado improve on the field. In some ways, it's kind of like USC hiring Lincoln Riley, right? Sanders obviously isn't as accomplished a coach, but it has the same impact in terms of making a program relevant and generating attention for the conference.
What does this do for the Pac-12's media valuation? Does it do anything at all when it comes to contract negotiations? Because I looked at that hiring of Deion and said, man, the timing could not be any better for this conference. Colorado opens with TCU. That's got to be in prime time, pardon the pun, to open this season. But what does this do from a business standpoint within the Pac-12?
You know, I don't know that it necessarily has a direct impact on the dollars that the conference is negotiating with ESPN and Fox and Amazon and whoever else. I mean, I don't know that ESPN executives are going to say, you know what, we're going to give you X number of million per year, and now we're going to give you X plus 10 million per year because of Deion. But it certainly there's got to be some kind of indirect impact within the negotiations. You know, there's no question about it. Everybody knows Deion, right? So the timing was good. It can't hurt. I don't know exactly the degree to which it will materially help the bottom line.
Why Colorado for him, do you think? Because you and I could do 15 minutes on how the facilities at Colorado have been atrocious and how they've gone from, it's six coaches since 2000, and the lack of commitment, and go all the way back to the Bill McCartney days where they were the CU Buffs to nobody's in the stands and nobody cares. But why this program, do you think, John?
Well, I think mainly because they offered him a job, right? There have been a bunch of opportunities, you know, especially closer. He's from Florida, right? I mean, he's coaching in Mississippi at the FCS level. And there have been job openings down there, right? I mean, Auburn just hired someone. And it doesn't appear that he had job offers, at least not job offers with the salary mm-hmm. that he found acceptable. So Colorado was willing to take a risk, and it is certainly a risk that a lot of schools, especially in the Southeastern quadrant, haven't been willing to take in the last year or two for whatever reason. This is clearly a sign of both desperation on Colorado's part to become relevant, but also that they're willing to roll the dice, and they're paying. I mean, he's getting paid a ton of money. They're paying him almost $6 million a year. He's going to be one of the best paid coaches in the Pac-12, and he's never been a Power 5 coach.
Okay, so let me dig into this then a little bit. Is it, okay, you're at Jackson State. Let's just say you're Auburn, or you're any of the schools down in the South, to your point. You've done it at Jackson State. You need to go up the flagpole a little bit higher in quality and caliber. So, Deion, go to Colorado, turn that thing around in 2 or 3 years, and we're going to bang on your doors. Because, look, in this day and age, John, it's not about we're in a rebuild mode. You can't have rebuild modes with the transfer portal opening today. Look at USC, what they won 4 games a year ago, and here they were. They got it turned around in a hurry. He can win in a hurry. Any coach can win in a hurry if they're able to go get the best of the best. And do you think the message to him was, you're just not quite ready for us here in the SEC?
That could have been it. I mean, it's very curious that they didn't. Nobody down there has hired him. But look, Colorado was certainly going to have to contort themselves around Deion. Right? He is a big personality. He is going to approach things in an unconventional manner. And Colorado was willing to tolerate that because of the potential reward. And if Deion is there for 3 years and he wins, Colorado is better off, even if he loses, than they are now. And if he doesn't win and it's a flop, they really haven't lost any ground, right? They're the worst Power Five team in the country this year. So their risk reward is on their side. Maybe some SEC schools felt a little differently about that, and they wanted to see him win at this level first. But certainly, if he does win, he will have a ton of job offers in 2 or 3 years.
I've had some ASU fans down here that have gotten to me that have said we made the wrong choice. If Deion Sanders were available, we should have held out and gone after him rather than Kenny Dillingham. I would disagree with that, just on what I've seen out of Dillingham here in the first 8 days and the staff that he's assembling. I was on the sideline with him last Friday night with Sean Aguano and Bobby Wade, and Kenny Dillingham was the very last person to get off the field after a playoff game was over. The lights were being turned out. He's trying to get a five-star receiver who's looking at Georgia and Alabama. I would have never seen that out of Herm or any of the coaches, for that matter, head coaches through the years. So a 32-year-old that is going to get after it, roll his sleeves up, I would take. That said, if you're at Media Day 9 months from now, John Wilner, one, is the Pac-12 going to expand Media Days to be 5 days like the SEC because they know now they've got a story to tell? Who's your first one that you want to get to? Is it USC? This is your last Pac-12 Media Day? Is it Deion Sanders? Is it Kenny Dillingham and Jed Fish? Is it behind what's door number three? Media Day, John, I'm throwing it to you 9 months in advance.
Yeah, they need 4 days for Deion, 1 day for everybody else. You know, Deion will be the story. There is no question. Look, he's a sports icon. It's kind of like Bill Walton coaches at UC Riverside for 2 years and then goes to a school in the Pac-12 as a head coach, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something, or Magic Johnson. It's something like that. Okay. So to me, he will be the story. There's no doubt about it. I agree with you. I don't know that Deion worked for ASU, right? You could argue that Kenny Dillingham was or was not the right hire for ASU, but I don't think Deion was. ASU needs something different from Colorado, different school, different time and place in a lot of ways. And who knows, maybe ASU reached out and Deion didn't want to have anything to do with it because he's worried about the NCAA sanctions. And that's one reason why Dillingham was a good risk for ASU, is his ties to the school are such that he's willing to work through any kind of sanctions that might have a lingering effect. ASU was not the right spot for Deion. Deion was not right for ASU. But it is going to be fascinating, right? I mean, we saw last year ESPN broadcast one spring football game in the entire country, and it was USC's because of Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams. I would not be surprised if ESPN sets up shop in Boulder in April and broadcast live from Colorado spring game. He is that big of a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Who is most concerned within the Pac-12? If you could take a program and say, they're all concerned now that Deion Sanders is here, like, how are we going to go out and find talent? But is there a program that you look at and say, you know what, Oregon's had their way with Phil Knight. Now there's somebody equal to, we can go find that money. USC is now in crosshairs with college. Is there a program more so than others within the conference you think is impacted?
You know, I don't know if one specifically is impacted. I mean, you know, Utah and Colorado were on different trajectories and recruit differently. But I think certainly Arizona and Arizona State are impacted because those schools like to recruit Texas and Arizona, just like Colorado. So I would think both, and they're not high level programs, right? The elite, Deion's going to get a few elite kids, but a lot of them are going to take a wait and see look. It's more about, you know, this to me, good second tier players. And will they now, especially kids from the Phoenix area, will they start looking at Colorado, whereas they wouldn't have looked at them before? Mm-hmm. Same thing with kids in Texas. Are they going to, you know, that's a big recruiting ground for Colorado, and Deion has got a lot of ties to Texas because of his days with the Cowboys. And, you know, I think the Arizona schools both could be impacted, maybe a school like Cal as well. But I don't know that the big boys are necessarily going to get affected directly and significantly, at least right away, by Deion. Now, if he's winning in a year or two, that may change.
Okay, let me put a bow on this with you. When you heard the news of Deion Sanders to Colorado, what was your initial reaction? Now you've had a few days to chop it up inside your head. How do you feel about it now?
Well, my initial reaction was, oh boy, I probably need to pick up and move to Boulder, right? You know, I mean, covering Deion on a day-to-day basis would be something else. Yeah. You know, it was interesting because it looked like, you know, there was reports like 2 weeks ago that they had made him an offer and then everything was quiet. And you kind of figured, well, either he's waiting for his last game at Jackson State, which was Saturday, or those reports were totally erroneous. And it turns out those reports were right, and he was waiting for his last game. So I wasn't surprised at all when it happened on Saturday afternoon. But my reaction on seeing it become official was, you know, this is going to make the conference more interesting by a factor of 37. The Pac-12 is not, you know, it's got good coaches, but it's not usually really interesting with personalities, right? Mike Leach was kind of an exception. Deion just takes everything up five levels in terms of it being an interesting and entertaining conference to write about.
Let's move over to Stanford. So that job is now the only one open right now. Do you believe that they have a short list? I've heard some rumblings about a current coach within the conference, maybe in their target. Do you hear anything about Chip Kelly in Stanford?
Yeah. In fact, I tweeted something about that. That would not be a total shock. I know it might not make a lot of sense to some folks, but I could see that happening. You know, I'm not sure that Chip is all that eager to go in the Big Ten. I'm not sure that Chip is all that thrilled with the contract that he was given by UCLA last winter. In some ways, you know, Chip likes kids who are going to just graduate and play football. And Stanford's kids kind of fit with what he likes. I would not be shocked. I don't think it's likely, but I would say, you know, there's a 15-20% chance Chip ends up at UCLA at Stanford. Otherwise, you know, there's some names, Greg Roman, who was a offensive coordinator under Jim Harbaugh and now is with the Ravens. I think he's going to be on their short list probably. But we'll see. That was not a place that was going to consider Deion. Let's put it that way. Stanford has got a much different model for its coach and much, much different challenges than almost every other school in the conference.
Couple other things to get you out of here with John Winter chopping it up. Bo Baldwin comes to Kenny Dillingham's staff. How familiar are you with him? What are they getting here in their guy running the offense?
Yeah, you know, he did very well at Eastern Washington as the head coach. And I thought did a pretty good job at Cal during his, I think it was 3 years as the offensive coordinator under Justin Wilcox. You know, they ran you could see they had a plan. I don't think he necessarily had the talent to execute his plan quite the way he wanted. And then he moved on, took the Cal Poly job. It didn't work out there. I think that's a smart hire for Dillingham. But to me, it's a secondary hire compared to Brian Ward, right? Because if you're the head coach and your background is on the offensive side, your key hire is your defensive coordinator and vice versa, right? If you're a defensive coach, your key hire is your offensive coordinator. So to me, Brian Ward is the more significant hire for ASU. You know, we saw him 1 year at Washington State, but he was coaching under a head coach who was a defensive specialist. So we don't know exactly what Brian Ward is going to bring to the table, basically as ASU's kind of co-head coach, at least from a game planning standpoint.
All right. In the bowl season, bowls are all out. Who wins, who loses in the bowl season in the Pac-12 from John Wilner's view?
Well, I mean, certainly Utah is a big winner, winning the championship and getting back to the Rose Bowl. I think Oregon State was a big winner, right? Las Vegas Bowl against Florida, that is a high-profile matchup and location for the Beavers, who are typically more of a Sun Bowl, LA Bowl, Cheez-It Bowl kind of a program. So to me, Oregon's, and they should, they got rewarded for winning 9 games and beating Oregon. So for sure, Oregon State is a big winner from this session.
Let's go off that. Appreciate your time and your insights as always, John. Have a great week. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brett.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. He delivers it every Monday with me and then on the website at sports360az.com. All sorts of great angles from John and his team. And we're back with more after this timeout.